Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Coming up on Inside Coverage, is it over for Bill Belichick? Is Shador Sanders the number two quarterback in Cleveland? And note to Eagles, run the stinking football. Frank Schwab is with me. Inside Coverage next. Let's do a show, everybody. Welcome to Inside Coverage, the how, the why, any and everything you need to know in the National Football League. This is heading into week six. Right, geez. All right, this is the Wednesday show heading into week six. It's crazy how you kind of sort of like lose track of all of it. It's Groundhog Day in the NFL. We're very fortunate to do what we do, but sometimes you have to step back and say, where am I? Who is this? Like, what are we doing and what week is it? It is week six. My name is Andrew Siciliano. Once again, it is a two-man production today, at least on the air. There are countless people behind the scenes. Madison Sanders, most notably, to thank here. That other man here deserves some applause, Frank Schwab, deserves a laurel and a hearty handshake and maybe a stiff drink for doing this show while his beloved Brewers are battling the hated Chicago Cubs, who still only won the 2016 World Series because of a baloney rain delay. Almost cursed, but it's a pod. We're allowed to do that. Frank, are you okay? Like, are you able to multitask, do the pod, and watch the game? Is the game on in your room somewhere?
I can neither confirm nor deny that it might be.
I hope it is.
My eye shot.
I'm not offended.
I can neither confirm nor deny for the YouTube people that this blue shirt under my normal shirt is a Brewer shirt. Who knows? Who could ever say?
Do the Cam Newton here, Frank. Do the Cam Newton. Do you have the Brewer shirt on?
A really cool Bob Uecker shirt that my friend got me. So
I'm glad it's a Bob Uecker shirt.
I am very much invested in the Milwaukee Brewers and this Chicago Cubs series. But we're here to talk football. That's what the people want. So I'll keep enough focus on that that we can talk about Joe Flacco for a second straight day.
Okay, so let's talk about Joe Flacco. Let's actually spin it to the Browns here today, because we'll get to Flacco in a second. He is going to start, not surprisingly, for the Bengals this week as they go to Lambeau. He gets to face the Packers. Yet again, he was driven down to Cincinnati yesterday. Bengals sent a car. Big of them. And he and his wife sat in the back seat, and he was on the phone the entire time.
He had more leg room than her, I hope.
Yeah,
I would hope so. Because we've all seen those pictures. That's so funny.
He was on the phone with Zach Taylor. Again, get to the Bengals in a second and what it means for them. Let's focus here on the Browns, because immediately the algorithms that control our lives all threw into our faces, Shador Sanders number two. Okay. As opposed to Dylan Gabriel gets another start. Now there's no veteran behind him. Or veteran starts for the Bengals. Browns trade quarterback within division. No, it's Shador number two. As I told you yesterday, and to quote the great Lee Corso, not so fast, my friends, that is not necessarily the case. And honestly, my gut tells me it's going to be Bailey Zappi as the number two quarterback week six when the Browns with Dylan Gabriel go to Acrisure. That's in Pittsburgh, to play the Steelers. Kevin Stefanski came to the podium today, as every head coach does on Wednesday, save for Mike Tomlin. He does Tuesday. He came to the podium today, and he did the normal, hey, we're back from last week. Here's what we have to do. Here's what we have to clean up. Let's talk about the opponent. The Steelers are always tough. Blah, 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 blah. And that's it. He hadn't addressed the trade. He just kind of set up the week. Then he opens it up to questions, as he always does, and the very first question wasn't, hey, Kevin, why'd you trade Joe Flacco? Hey, Kevin, he was the starter just 6 weeks ago. Now you moved him into division. What happened? What changed? No, the very first question was, Kevin, is Shador Sanders the number two quarterback? Here's his answer.
The Joe trade took us by surprise. That was not something that we saw coming. You know, they called us and you know, it happened very fast and happened not too long ago. So still working through all roster type of things. I always have to be mindful of our players and our players' development. And, you know, I want to make sure that I'm always doing what's best for our players and, of course, our team. But, you know, with young players, I'm always thinking about last week making the change to Dylan. You have to think long and hard about that, because these are young players that you're so invested in their development. So I'll let the week play out and make a decision later on that.
You see the look on his face there, Frank. He kind of says like, whoa, let me address the trade first. Like,
yeah, right.
U-turn. It caught us by surprise. The Bengals called. We weren't going to do anything about it. We're like, okay, sure, you could have him. And that's kind of the thinking there. But then you have to unpack, well, geez, we're moving the veteran mentor for these young quarterbacks. We're getting the guy for them to lean on out of the room. And how does that affect our young quarterbacks? There was no way that Kevin Stefanski was going to commit to any lineup change on Wednesday. He doesn't do that. That's not how he operates. Speaking somewhat sarcastically, he might not admit to having met Shedeur Sanders. And again, that is sarcasm here. But Kevin is in a silo, and that's how he operates on the podium. It's simply the way he does things. Other coaches are very similar. I'm not going to give you anything until I have to, whether it's on Friday or Sunday before the game. So he wasn't going to do that. That's number one. Number two, and Kurt Warner, I think, Frank, laid this out really well today on our friend Rich Eisen's show on ESPN. And that is, it doesn't do a lot of good to have a kid leading a kid. It doesn't do a lot of good to have a rookie quarterback backed up by a rookie quarterback. As Kurt said, hey, sometimes rookie quarterbacks have bad days. Are you going to go then to another rookie quarterback? You're going to throw Shedeur Sanders out there against a Mike Tomlin defense that has already forced 10 turnovers on the road in a building that the Browns haven't won a regular season game in. Wait for it. In 22 years. And when Kevin says, I have to consider the development of my young players, just like he had to consider last week, do I start Dylan Gabriel internationally in London against Brian Flores? He has to think, does it behoove Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders, for that matter, to put these two kids in this situation where Shedeur comes off the bench if Gabriel gets hurt against Mike Tomlin's defense on the road in what has been a house of horrors for the Browns? That helps nobody. So if I had to bet right now, without inside information, and I'm not allowed to bet, I think it's going to be Bailey Zappe.
Which makes sense. I think back to when Dylan got the job and we were on with Charles, and Charles made a good point saying, basically, of course, Shedeur is not going to be a number two. You want your number two guy to be at least in a mentorship role in some ways, a support role. You're not asking Shedeur Sanders, who has never taken an NFL snap, to support your rookie starting quarterback. That's ridiculous. Joe Flacco was kind of perfect for that job, but he's not there anymore. You do have Bailey Zappe, who, anyway, make all jokes they want. Bailey Zappe has started games in the NFL. He's been around organizations, multiple organizations. He, you know, he's one of these guys that can do what they need him to do as a backup quarterback. And I'm interested in this, Andrew. And I said, as we're talking off air about this, what happens if something happens to Dylan Gabriel? He struggles and needs to get benched, gets hurt, whatever. I mean, is there a point then when Shedeur moves up from 3 to 1? Because I could see that. I could see that possibility, almost like when you have an inactive running back, but he's really the number two, but you need your second running back in that game to play special teams and he doesn't. Almost the same thing. The number two quarterback in this situation is more of a support role. If Bailey Zappe can get you through a game, he can do that easily. And then you reevaluate on Monday if you need to make a quarterback change. Is that the way you see it? How do you see this shaking out long term for sure?
Sure. So let's play the hypothetical. Let's say, and you're not rooting for injuries, clearly. Let's say Dylan Gabriel rolls an ankle and he's a month. Okay, let's say it's a high ankle sprain and he's a month. Well, Bailey Zappe gets you through the game, and the next week, you have a legitimate and fair conversation about, is it time to turn the keys over to the other rookie to see what he could do? And you let perhaps Shedeur start. Maybe you do that. But to have a rookie backing up a rookie, it just doesn't happen. Matter of fact, so let's go through the list last year, Frank, the rookie quarterbacks last year. Yeah. Caleb Williams in Chicago had Tyson Bagent back him up. Now, he's young, but at least he's played.
A little bit of experience. Not ideal, though.
Not ideal. Jaden Daniels had Marcus Mariota back him up. Drake May had Jacoby Brissett back him up. Mm-hmm. J.J. McCarthy, if he had started, had Sam Darnold backing up.
Yep.
It turned out to be the other way around. In Atlanta, when Michael Penix eventually took over, we all know he had Kirk Cousins behind him. In Denver, Bo Nix, you have Jarrett Stidham, who has started behind him. It is almost never seen. You never see a team going with a first round or second round, or in this case, third or fourth or fifth round rookie with another rookie backing that guy up. Matter of fact, I don't remember a time in which a rookie backed up a rookie, with one exception.
That's really
interesting. And I'm sure somebody can find other ones for me. But in 2012, yep, Washington drafted RG3 in the first round, Kirk Cousins in the fourth round. In week one on the road in New Orleans, they won that game. RG3 was the one. Kirk Cousins was the two, and Rex Grossman was the inactive three, but at least he was on the roster. You don't see rookies backing up rookies. People go, what about Joe Milton last year? That was only week 18. Jacoby Brissett backed up Drake May the entire season once May took over around week five. And then not until week 18 was Joe Milton up and active. All three quarterbacks were active that day. May got in there so they could say he started, and then Joe Milton took over. It just doesn't happen. For people screaming and yelling, you got to have Shador back up Dylan Gabriel. It doesn't happen like this in the NFL. Rookies don't back up rookies. And here's something else. There's only one quarterback in that building who has won a game in Pittsburgh. You know who it is? It's Bailey Zappi. It's Bailey Zappi. In 2023, right, Bailey Zappi led the New England Patriots to a win at Acrisure over the Pittsburgh Steelers. The last five quarterbacks in order to win a road game in Pittsburgh are Sam Darnold earlier this year, Dak Prescott, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, and Bailey Zappi, friends.
Wow, what a list. What a list.
He started nine games in the NFL. He's not a pushover. I'm telling you. He should be the guy this week.
Also, I think, and I don't know if you agree with me here, but it, because you were right yesterday when you said, look, Frank, nothing slows down the Shador talk, but it, doesn't it make a difference? If Shador is number two on game day, again, and I said this yesterday, every time Dylan Gabriel throws a third down incompletion, what are people on social media going to be saying? Oh, God, you got to put it Shador. Well, now that's off the table for now. Like,
I think what happened regardless, there's just a question of whether or not he's in.
And that's the thing. You're probably right because you're rational and logical. But a lot of people out there aren't when it comes to Shador Sanders. So maybe there's a small part of just trying to slow down this hype train somehow, some way by making threes at two. We'll see. We don't even know what Stefanski's going to do. I'm with you. I think it's going to be Bailey Zappi as the two. I do think that this doesn't mean really that much for Shador Sanders going down the road. I mean, if they get to a point where they need to make a quarterback change for whatever reason, I think they would consider all their options. They would consider Zappi. They would consider Shador. If it's a long-term thing, they would consider whoever is out there. I just don't think this matters much. As much as we're going to make of it, I don't think it matters as much as people are going to make it out to be.
Yeah. So both things can be true, and I'm with you. Both things can be true. Shador's working hard. He's getting closer.
I'm sure.
He's taking steps every day. And right now, Bailey Zappi should probably be the number two. Now, listen, if game day comes and it's the other way around and Shador is the number two, then I'll sit here and say that I'm wrong. And I'm not wishing for one or the other. I'm just trying to read the tea leaves and bring the receipts. Like in New Orleans right now, you have Spencer Rattler, who's a second-year quarterback, who played a lot of college football, backed up by a rookie, right? So that's kind of the inverse there. But there just aren't a lot of situations like this. There just aren't. And here's another procedural thing as well. So Bailey Zappi is on the practice squad. So for him to dress on game day, he can't be the emergency number three. The rule is if you're going to dress a third quarterback as the emergency QB, he can't be a practice squad elevation. He has to be on the 53-man roster. So if they want him on the number two, they're going to have to clear a space on the roster, either A, cut a guy, or B, move a guy to IR. So that move may be coming. You would think they would have done that earlier today when they had the roster spot to fill after the Flacco trade that opened up a spot on the 53. But instead, they elevated undrafted rookie corner Dom Jones, kid out of Colorado State, who's played very well on special teams. He had three already standard elevations from the P squad. So at that point, they had to sign him to the roster. That was a necessity to carry him through to next week. So they have to make a move. Shador, as it stands right now, or rather Bailey Zappi, as it stands right now, cannot dress unless they sign him to the active. No, that's not true. Let me rephrase that. He could dress as the number two as a practice squad elevation. He could not be the emergency three. So kind of scratch what I just said. Does that make sense? I made that. That makes sense, right, Frank?
No, it does. It does. All the roster permeations and all that. It does. And it's one of those things where the people out there screaming for Shedeur Sanders they don't care about that nuance. They really don't. It doesn't matter.
Right. So Bailey Zappe can't be the three. He's got to, if he's going to be the two, come up to the active roster. All right, I'm going in circles here. Let's move on to the Bengals side of things. Joe Flacco is going to wear number 16, and he's going to start this week, and man, this feels a bit weird. And Zach Taylor wasted no time. He went to the podium today and said, yeah, Joe's here. Joe's going to be our starter, period. Like, that's it. Like, we like what he does. He's got a big arm. He can throw the football. We talked to him for 5 hours on the phone yesterday on the drive down here. He was in the building this morning. I may have to simplify things, but he's been in a similar system, and we're going to go, period, full stop. Questions? You're like, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Not messing around.
Do you agree with this? Because I do. I'm like, what do you got to lose? Really? You're a 14-point underdog with Jake Browning. You're a 14-point underdog with Joe Flacco. But maybe he sparks something. It's a different look. He has, and I mean, we could joke about the history of beating a team with both playing on two different teams for the first time since Jack Kemp in 1962. He has scouted the Packers. He has seen the Packers very recently. So that part of his prep, just is he's done that already. Like the Packers haven't made wholesale changes in the last 3 weeks. Like what he prepped for the Browns, the prep is there. He just got to get some of the playbook down. Simplifying things is not always bad. Sometimes it's okay. Sometimes it's okay to say, let's just get back to basics right here. You know, like let's do our basic route combinations. And Joe, just get Jamar Chase the ball. Just get T. Higgins the ball. We'll be fine. Like this is better. It's a better product for them than Jake Browning. I'm in agreement because he got nothing to lose here. I think it's weird to trade for a guy on Tuesday and start him on Sunday against Micah Parsons and a really good defense, but I think it's fine. I don't think nothing to lose here for the Bengals.
Absolutely nothing to lose. That's why you make the trade, you throw him in there, and you see what he could do. Matt LaFleur on the flip side of it said, yeah, I don't think I've ever done this before. Like, I've faced the same quarterback twice when you're playing division games, but I don't know that I've ever seen this. Well, last time it happened was 2015. Jimmy Clausen started against the Seahawks twice, once for the Bears and once with the Ravens. So Jimmy Clausen is the answer to the trivia question for most recent time that it has happened. Hey, Madison, can we put that video back up? Jimmy Clausen. Can we put that video up again of Flacco walking to practice? So for those who don't know Cincinnati, Frank, you've covered the Bengals before. This is their practice facility. The reaction from this today, when Paul Daner, who's a great writer, covers the Bengals for the Athletic, fantastic, posted this, people lost their minds because they went, wait a minute, like he has to cross a city street to get to practice? Yes, for those who don't know, on the left, where Flacco is coming from, that is that's a ramp that leads into the tunnel, into the bottom of the stadium there, right? Paul Brown Stadium, or Paycor, as they call it now. So the Bengals practice on fields next to their stadium, and they practice every day, or they dress every day in their game day locker room. And then they walk out the loading dock through the parking lot, angle to the right, and cross a city street to get to their practice fields. Now they have cones up, and there's always someone making sure there are no cars. It's not like people are speeding by at 70 miles an hour. It's a side street. There's a lot of parking back there. It's down near the river. It's not like a major thoroughfare. But Bengals fans know. Other fans from around the league, the comments on those videos today, they lost their mind. Comments like, You trade for this poor old man and you make him walk in traffic to go to work. Like, you have to help this old man across the street to get to practice.
Yeah, we need some Boy Scouts. That's what the Bengals do. Joe Flacco. Let's get this old guy across the street, right? Like, by the way, the Packers do the same. The Packers, when they practice at the Don Hudson Center, they practice across the street too. But yeah, whatever. That's the inside baseball of the NFL, I guess. But yes, Joe Flacco walking to practice was a visual for people who have never seen that before. Like, oh wow,
with cars turning behind. Right.
Micah Parsons. Here. Yeah.
Hey, you might get hit by a car going to practice, and then you might get hit by Micah Parsons coming up on
Sunday.
Get you
ready. That's how we're prepping. Somebody is a Corvette's going to run you over. It's about the same as Micah Parsons on game day. Yeah.
All right. Coming up on Inside Coverage. The Chargers were 3-0. And now what? Can they overcome their injuries? Also coming up, and I didn't think we'd have to tease this early, is it over already for Bill Belichick in North Carolina? When I say, is it over, I mean, has he coached his last game? That's on Inside Coverage after this. Inside Coverage, everybody. Thanks for being here on a Wednesday heading into week 6. My name is Andrew Siciliano. Thanks for liking, subscribing, sharing, listening to us in podcast form, or watching on yahoosports.tv, the Yahoo Sports YouTube page, the Yahoo Sports app. However it is you're watching, we thank you and we thank you kindly, including Frank Schwab, who's doing so while watching the Brewers try to rally and beat the Cubs. All right.
They did have a rally when they were talking about Joe Flacco. I was a little distracted. I can't lie to you. I think I got through it, though. I think I kept my head in the game. Don't worry.
I mean, full disclosure, a couple of weeks ago, Frank, you might have caught my eyes up there a little bit, right? That's where my TV is. Yeah. You might have seen me watching some Guards Ball. Guards Ball is over, which means my love for baseball is still the same, but I can't sit here and watch Yankee games all night. It's just, anyway, I digress. Brief aside. Last week, I'm back east, as I often am. And I said to somebody that I'm not the biggest fan of the Red Sox. And their reaction was, oh, you're a Yankee fan. I'm like, it drives me up a wall.
It's possible to hate them both, trust me.
They think it's a binary choice, so many people.
Right.
Oh, you're not a Yankees fan, you must be a Red Sox fan. You're not a Red Sox fan, you must be a Yankees fan. No, there are 28 other teams.
Yeah, you wouldn't know it by the way the game is covered, but that's a different rant for a different day. Right. They cover it like it's four teams involved in the other. Well, whatever. It's fine.
Let's move on to Bill Belichick. So, full disclosure. Crazy respect for the guy. Anytime that I've done anything with Bill Belichick over the years, I've enjoyed it. He's treated me well, obviously. His coaching record, the 6 rings, speak for themselves. Okay. That said, I didn't think this was going to work at North Carolina. This is not an I told you so, but I just didn't get it from day one. Part of it seemed to be hubris. Part of it seemed to be boredom. Part of it seemed to be maybe he overextended a little bit last year doing media and really just wanted to get back to what he loved most. Part of it seemed to be proving people wrong and spite for the NFL community and the Patriots, most notably, who went after him. Well, how about this? Didn't paint him in a light that he certainly appreciated with that Apple documentary a year ago. But I never thought that a 72-year-old coach who had never coached college football, even if he brought in his son to be DC and younger coaches to try to assimilate into a younger Gen Z world, I never thought that it was necessarily going to work. But I don't think that anyone thought it was going to be this bad. How bad is it? There are some reports today that Bill Belichick may have coached his final game as the man in charge in Chapel Hill. UNC is off this week. They get Cal next week as they continue on their schedule. But it's all starting at the top. And this is from Ali Conley. It's all starting at the top and the boys are affected. I don't fault the players. I fault the leadership that created this toxic environment. I beg your pardon. That's from WRAL. Ali Conley as well, who's covered that team and plenty of people know his work, said that there are many who believe Belichick won't make it to his last game and that some on the staff have found it difficult to get in touch with Belichick during the bye week, and that reportedly they are looking into negotiating some kind of settlement and getting Belichick out of there to just say, this didn't work, and we are cutting our losses. If this is the case, Frank, it would be the most stunning fall from grace and stunning face plant and failure for one of the greatest coaches to ever coach in any sport, not only in the United States, but anywhere. This would just be shocking.
Totally agree with you. Yeah, for my money, the greatest coach in NFL history. He has that respect. Boy, there's so much unpack here. I think that I'll take the L. You said you didn't think it would work out. I didn't think North Carolina would be winning national titles or anything, but I thought it was going to go well. I really did. I thought Bill Belichick wants a different challenge. He's been away from the game for a year. This is what he knows. He's a coach. He wants to be with a whistle on the sideline in practice. Like, this is what he wants to do. He's going to be reinvigorated by something new, something different. He truly seemed like he was embracing, hey, let me do something different. Like, I've done the NFL. I've won 6 rings and 2 more as a defensive coordinator, which we shouldn't just gloss over. He was a big part of those Giants championships.
Yeah, right.
So I'm going to try something different. And I thought you're putting one of the best tactical coaches of all time into the ACC. I think he's going to do okay with that. Well, we're learning very quickly that the college game and the NFL game is almost 2 different sports at this point. Yeah, they look similar, but really they're not. Like, there's a big, big difference between NFL and college football in so many ways. And I'm not even going to make the argument right now one's better than the other. I'm just saying they're different. They are completely different. And we're seeing that. And we're seeing a coach who is, he's in his 70s. Yeah. And this is a game that you need to connect with young people, very young people, not professionals. We're talking about kids just out of high school a little bit ago,
So except they are
it hasn't worked.
And that's the issue.
Yeah, that's true, too.
He can't boss them around because they'll just leave. No, I'm not trying to poke holes in your thing here.
No, I get it.
It's just there's layers now to the college game. You can't Bobby Knight these kids because they'll be like, hey,
exactly.
Peace. Oh, I'm out of here.
I'll get my annual money, NIL money from Texas Tech or whatever, right? Like, so, I think when you take a step back and I think about it again, seeing what's happened, you could see Bill Belichick's scheme. Schemes might not even matter that much. I mean, what matters in college football is having the horses, right? Like, schematically, yes, it does matter, but I think it's more, do you have the players? And that's going to take a while. This was not going to be a one-year thing where he just flips everything around. And teaching this stuff to 19-year-old kids is not going to be easy. And his coaching style is not really conducive to college football. It's barely conducive to the NFL. We heard Gronk, Brady, these guys, high-profile guys, a lot of rank-and-file Patriots guys, did not love playing for Bill Belichick all the time. He's a hard coach to play, in many ways. Successful, very successful. So you could see how it didn't work out, but I didn't expect this. You know what it makes me think of just off the top of my head? And it's more of a college to pros, but Jerry Tarkanian. Jerry Tarkanian was an awesome college coach. Awesome. One of my favorite coaches of all time. I love that UNLV team. He went to the Spurs and was there for like a minute and a half. And it just was like, nope, this ain't going to work. And it was over. Like, as quick as it started. It's all like, how are we going to look back at this? How do we look at, if this is over for Bill Belichick, and this is a spectacular failure in every single way, including what looks like kind of quiet quitting on his team. Like, I don't like that. I don't respect that, really. I think even if you're losing games at UNC, you don't just jump ship in the middle of it. You ride it out until the end of the season and say, okay, guys, I'm retiring. It doesn't seem like he's going to do that. We'll see where that goes. But if this is it, doesn't that, I hate the legacy talk of like, oh, he went and lost some games, so it ruins his legacy. You know what? Jordan's legacy wasn't ruined because he didn't look great with the Washington Wizards. It just doesn't happen that way. But in this case, Andrew, this might stain his legacy, doesn't it? It almost has to a little bit.
You know what? It's a fact. So I am not, just full disclosure, one of these people that needs to determine legacy in the moment. And it's what's always, and this That's is not fair. Me pushing back on you. I've always been annoyed by the screaming head shows when they say, for example, the topic bar is, does tonight's outcome affect player X's legacy? And you're like, come on, guys. This isn't the final game of player X's career, right? We're not writing the man off for his lifetime achievements and saying they're null and void if for some reason his team, for whatever reason, doesn't win tonight. So I'm never in the very moment it happens, this determines a legacy kind of person. But I do think the Jordan thing is an interesting comparison because Michael did his thing. He then obviously went to play baseball. He came back, won 3 more championships. He then couldn't let it go. So he went to the Wizards. His knees were killing him. He barely could make it out of the court every night. He drafted Kwame Brown and then destroyed Kwame Brown mentally by just riding him and riding him and riding him and riding him as a teammate and as a boss. It was really, really, really ugly. Michael Jordan has survived. He is just fine. Joe Namath. Not Joe Namath.
Yeah,
I beg
nobody
your
thinks about
Johnny Unitas.
Yeah, Joe Namath. We say, West. Oh yeah, I remember him with the Rams. But Joe Namath is one of the greats of all time. We don't care.
Johnny Unitas. Like Willie all Mays, these players whatever. Have gone right. places. Willie Mays with the Mets. Like you survive, right? You survive. All those players though were beloved.
That's
Jordan
fair.
Was feared,
oh, yeah.
and
Good
there are
point.
Plenty of people that dislike Jordan. Belichick though has this aura that a lot of people just despise him. They think. You know, for whatever reason, he cheated. He only did it because of Brady. He's gruff. He's not happy. He's negative. He's mean-spirited. You only love him if you're a Patriot fan. Some Patriot fans have now, over the years, taken Brady's side against Belichick and said they only won because of Brady and not because of Belichick. So the amount of people or the percentage of people that love Bill Belichick is far, far, far smaller than Jordan. Or Unitas,
that's
or Namath, or Mays, or any one of these greats that fell from grace elsewhere at the end of their career, trying to hang on for one last day in the sun or in the spotlight. So I do think this is really going to change the way people view Belichick. Yeah, for better or for worse.
There's been so many people just wanting Bill Belichick to fail. And, look, I get it. He was kind of the Darth Vader of the NFL for so many years. He made it easy to root against him. I never did. I just, whatever. His shtick with the media was his shtick. But he was a great, great coach, and I respected that. And I never really, I don't get involved with, hating guys because of their public persona and press conferences or whatever. But for many people, you could tell the knives were out. Like they were sharpening their swords from opening day. Like when they got, they scored on their first drive and got run out. Everybody was on social media dunking on Bill Belichick. And it's not stopped. You are absolutely right that part of his legacy, and we're going to look back, and I won't do this, but this will be done. What happened? Oh, Brady left and he won a Super Bowl. Bill Belichick ran the Patriots into the ground. All very fair, by the way. And then he went to North Carolina and had an Urban Meyer-esque run as a college coach. Urban Meyer is a pro coach, obviously. Urban Meyer is a great college coach. Urban Meyer-esque with the Jaguars.
It's a great analogy.
Coach. Right. Yeah. Because and you look back at Urban Meyer, first thing I think of, maybe it's because I cover the NFL and I covered that debacle. But the first thing I think of when we talk about Urban Meyer, it's not Florida. It's not Ohio State. It's, that Jaguars time. And I don't think that that's going to be the case with Bill Belichick in 10 years. But I think that when you're like Bill Belichick, I think a lot of negative things are going to come up. Whereas if he retired the day Brady left, none of it. He's just the guy who has basically had the greatest dynasty in sports history, a defensive genius, all this kind of stuff. But now it's like, Brady went on to win without him, and he never won anything without Brady. It just clouds a legacy in a way that is it's honestly unfortunate for Bill Belichick, although he doesn't engender any sympathy from basically anybody outside of New England.
So you mentioned that first drive, where Carolina marched down the field and scored, and everybody went, "Woo, we're off! This is going to be fun."
Wow, yeah.
I think a lot of your average football fans tuned out after that game. They remember that it got ugly that night. And then, they lost again. Okay, cool. I'm going to worry about my team. I just want to lay out just how bad it has been so far at North Carolina. So they are 2-3. North Carolina, this is its worst start against Power Four competition since the Tar Heels first started football in 1888. So
what?
Just 1888.
Wow. I didn't know that.
In perspective, it was Grover Cleveland's first term as U.S. president. There were 38 states at that point. So they're 0-1 in the ACC, 2-3 overall. All three of their losses have come against Power Four programs. And in those losses, the cumulative score is 120-33. They've lost to TCU, UCF, and Clemson. So it's an 87-point margin of defeat against Power Four teams, which is the worst in school history. They've won two games. Those games have been against Charlotte and Richmond. Charlotte, again, one of the one wins. Charlotte has only beaten Monmouth this year, and that was in a squeaker. They also, UNC, beat Richmond. Richmond this year, the Spiders have lost to both Lehigh and Bucknell.
Wow. Don't want to do that. Maybe a
UNC,
basketball, it's okay, but yeah.
UNC is 75th in total defense against Clemson last week.
Should be Bill Belichick's. Bill Belichick's one of the defensive geniuses of all time. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
75th in total defense. That defense against Clemson gave up 8 explosive plays. Against TCU, 10 explosive plays. Against UCF, 5 explosive plays. They are one of 11 FBS teams that is yet to win a game against a Power 4 opponent. Mm. So for those of you saying, ah, come on, you're just piling on, it's not that bad, I'm telling you, it's that bad.
It is. And, you know, and this is clearly the end of the line for Bill Belichick, unless he's coaching high school next year or something. No other college is going to give him a shot. The NFL seems to have just kind of passed at this point, and it's not going to get any better a couple of years removed and with this disastrous stint at UNC if it is over. So, you know, you talk about legacy and not wanting to do it in a moment because the guy's got more left to play. This is it for Bill Belichick, really. Like, we could kind of, if that was his last, we've written a book on Bill Belichick. I don't think we'll see him as a head coach, not going to be a coordinator anywhere or anything like that. So this is kind of it. And it's a sad way for it to end. And nobody feels sorry for Bill Belichick. He's done that to himself in many ways. But I look at this guy as literally, you know, one of the titans of the NFL. Like, you talk about, can you write the story of the NFL without this guy? You cannot write the story of the NFL without Bill Belichick, period. Like, he is one of the absolute just superstars in the coaching realm. And for it to end this way, for him to quit 5 games in, maybe, if that's true, we don't know where it's going to go. But just to get bludgeoned by Dabo Swinney and a disappointing Clemson team, that's the way he's going to go out. It's a sad way. It's not what he, I'm sure it's not what he envisioned. And now him looking for the exit is just, all of it is just sad and terrible. And UNC fans who got excited. I remember week one, you remember this, Andrew. They were showing Jordan, LT, and Roy Williams in a luxury suite up in Chapel Hill, and everybody was excited. Yeah. Oh, Bill Belichick. And this has just been miserable. It's just a bad, bad way for a coaching legend to likely end his career.
We were supposed to talk Chargers in this segment, too. There is a little bit of a tie here, although I'm making it's a bit of a stretch. Belichick went to college football, in my mind, thinking, I'm going to be one and done there. I'm going to turn this program around. That's why the buyout's in there. And then I could get back in the NFL next year. Jim Harbaugh went to college football. I'm getting back in the NFL. Remember, he talked to the Vikings. His name was always floated in December by the Sunday morning insiders, whatever network you prefer. Oh, people want Jim Harbaugh. I'm like, no, they don't. No, they don't. Well, eventually the Chargers did. And Jim Harbaugh took his team to the playoffs in year one last year. Jim Harbaugh had his team 3-0 right out of the gate. And then a funny thing happened, Frank. Their entire offensive line got banged up, right? Oh. You lose your left tackle. You lose your right tackle, who is playing left tackle. Everybody is injured. And all of a sudden, Justin Herbert is getting hit 9 times a game last week by a Washington defense that, quite frankly, isn't that dynamic. Let's cut the baloney here. They have 7 giveaways already this year. They only turn the ball over 9 times a year ago. They're getting pass heavy because their top 2 running backs, Najee and Amarian Hampton, are both injured. This week, it's not that much easier for the Chargers. Yes, they're taking on a mediocre, at best, Miami team, but they've got to go all the way to Miami. LA to Miami is an awful flight. It's just... are you convinced the Chargers can pick themselves up off the mat?
I'm not. And I say this while acknowledging that Jim Harbaugh is one of the best coaches in the NFL or college football, I guess. I mean, he's one of the best coaches wherever you put him. So if anybody can figure it out, it's going to be Jim. But you get to the point. I mean, we didn't even talk about Mekhi Becton's been out. Khalil Mack has been out.
Him too.
It's just, at some point, the injuries just pile up on you so much. And, you know, when they were 3-0, I think Justin Herbert, justifiably so, was atop everybody's, hey, this is my MVP guy I'm talking about. He had played at that level. But like you said, when you're getting hit 9 times in a game, you can't function as a quarterback. You can't function as an offense. When you lose both of your running backs, you're down to Kamani Vidal and Hassan Haskins. It's like one of these guys might do well in that role, but I don't bank on it necessarily. You've lost everything. And it was so quick. And that's kind of one of the lessons of the NFL is how brutal this game can be. As far as just through 3 weeks, we were all toasting the Chargers. Like, oh, wow, they're going to beat the Chiefs for the AFC West. Herbert's going to win MVP and blah, blah, blah. And Jim Harbaugh's all this. over an 8-day stretch, you lose to the Giants. You come back the next Sunday, you lose a pretty young competitive game against the Commanders in many ways, offensively specifically. You didn't score in the second half. Now your entire season looks different. It's just because of injuries. I think if they stayed healthy, they were going to be just fine, but that's not the case. That's not the case. And I think The Chargers are in real, real trouble here.
I think he's going to coach his way out of it, but I don't think, you know, this clear path to an AFC championship game is anywhere.
They make a playoffs? Do you think they make playoffs?
I think they can. Yeah, because I believe in Justin Herbert.
I believe in
Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, that's fair.
But
yeah,
it is a rough road. Look, other teams have overcome offensive line issues, but those three pieces, especially two of them long-term, one of them for the season, that is rough. Coming up, a message to the Eagles. Run the stinking football, please. I beg of you, so we can stop talking about this. A Thursday night preview on Inside Coverage. As I said before, is it really week six? It's week six.
Going fast.
Oh, my Lord. It's week six, everybody. So let's get to the Thursday night preview here, because Thursday night we'll open up at MetLife Stadium as the Eagles take the trip up 95 at 4-1, coming off their first loss of the season. Oh, my God, the sky is falling in Philadelphia. It is never sunny there. It is always gloomy. They are facing the 1-4 Giants, who at one point last week on the road in New Orleans against the winless Saints turned the ball over on five consecutive possessions. I didn't make that up. So as we preview Thursday Night Football, and by the way, the Eagles are going to win. They're going to go to 5-1. That's not like some guarantee, but it's going to happen.
Yeah, you come on, Andrew. Did you watch the NFL last week? Did you watch
it? Yes, I did.
Because the
Eagles are going
to win. We
would have
said that about the Cardinals.
The game. Let me just ask this aloud. What the heck were the Eagles doing last week? They threw the ball 44 times, or they called 44 pass plays, and they ran it only 11. Like, what are you doing? I know you're trying to keep everybody happy, but don't keep everybody happy. Do what got you there. Run the ball. And yes, I know they missed Mekhi Becton. I know he's in LA and he is injured. I know Lane Johnson's banged up and Landon Dickerson is banged up. And it's hard to recreate a 2,000-yard success like you had a year ago, and it was more than that. It was more than just Saquon's rushing. Teams catch up with you. We talked to Lane Johnson about that before the season began. Teams are going to catch up, right? But run the ball. A.J. Brown wants it. I get it. Devontae Smith wants it. I get it. But you know what? I'm going to go Mel Robbins here. Frank, do you know Mel Robbins?
I do not.
She writes books. All right. Kind of like some pop psychology. Right, a lot of it is kind of self-explanatory stuff, but when you hear it, when you read it, I read her book, Let Them, over the summer. It helped me out a lot. But just the premise is, like, if people are upset, let them be upset. Worry about you, right? If people are having success, let them have success. Don't be jealous. Worry about you. Let A.J. Brown be upset. It's okay. It really is okay. Let Devontae Smith be mildly frustrated. It's okay. Let the fans say what they want to say. It's okay. Let the screaming heads say what they want to say. It's okay. Let them run the ball, Kevin Petullo. Do what got this team here to begin with. Jalen Hurts is not a dropback passer, okay? He's not, honestly, the most anticipatory thrower. He's a hell of a winner, though, and he's a hell of a leader. Run the ball. Do it. And if you do, you know what? You're going to keep winning. You're 19-4 against the Giants over the last decade. You're going to be 20-4 if you just run the stinking football, please.
I do agree. In some ways, I think last week was about the Broncos just, we're going to take away the run. We're going to stack the line. And hey, you're just going to have to throw it. But I think Eagles of last year would have looked at that and said, no, you don't dictate what we do. We dictate what you do. And we're going to run the ball and we're going to do it successfully. And if you want to stack the box, that's fine, because we have this guy called Saquon Barkley, and he's the best running back in football. I think they've lost a little bit of their swagger that way. The line's beat up. They're playing through injuries. And hats off to them for being tough and playing it out. This is not the same offensive line. And honestly, it doesn't look like the same Saquon Barkley. I don't know, Andrew, if it's the 482 touches that he had last season that we all heard about. But his yards per game rushing has gone from 125 to 53. That's unbelievable. Like, that's a career for some guys, that many yards. Like, that per game. Like, that's seriously unbelievable. And I don't think it's all Saquon's fault. I don't think it's all the offensive line's fault. I don't think it's all the offensive coordinator's fault. But I think it all plays into each other. They have not gotten into a rhythm. They have not gotten into a groove. It's played into their inconsistency as a team. I don't think the Eagles are going to be special unless Saquon Barkley gets it going, unless the run game gets it going. The two are synonymous. I don't think it's going to be Will Shipley or A.J. Dillon digging them out of this. I don't expect Saquon Barkley to go back to 125 rushing yards a game, but they have to get it going. And I think that's going to be a big focus, what we're all looking at, what we're all talking about on Thursday night. If they come out and they can't run the ball against the Giants again, and it's another one of those Eagles performances where they kind of take a quarter off, they take a half off, the Giants are threatening, knocking on the door, maybe upsetting them. We saw so many upsets last week that we're going to come out of that game saying, what's wrong with Saquon Barkley? And in turn, what's wrong with the Eagles? But Saquon was such a big part of that engine last year, and it's just not the same. And it might get going. We're really early in the season, relatively speaking. He's got the talent. That line is always great. It just maybe slumping a little bit right now because of injuries, but yes, I think the one factor for the Eagles to get them back on track to repeating a Super Bowl chance, Saquon Barkley can't average 53 rushing yards a game. Like, that's just not going to happen, and you win a Super Bowl, period, end of story.
Yeah, I'm with you. He's got to do better than 53 yards a game, but he also needs
more than
six.
And part of
that
is commitment
carries
to the run game, too, Andrew. You are right.
He had
I do
six
mean to
carries
point that out. They need to
last
run
week. It was the fewest amount of carries he's had in 4 years. Since week 11, when he was a member of the Giants in 2021. I'm with you. Denver sold out to stop the run, but it's not as if they were the first team to sell out to stop the run. You don't think the Rams sold out to stop the run last year in the divisional round? Saquon is still running, ripping off 75-yard carries like the Rams sold out to stop the run when they faced each other on Sunday night in December or in November last year here in L.A. To that point, those 11 carries, those 11 rushing attempts collectively for a team were the fewest in any Jalen Hurts start ever as an Eagle, including the playoffs. The Broncos were not the first team over those 80 career Jalen Hurts starts to try to stop the run. To me, the Eagles definitely made some kind of decision last week. We're going to shut people up. All right. We're going to feed AJ Brown. We're going to feed him. Let's feed him. Let's feed Dallas Goedert. Let's feed Devontae Smith.
And you're right. You're not going to keep everybody happy.
We're going to do it. You can't keep everybody happy. And sometimes let them. I also found it was interesting. Did you hear Brian Daboll yesterday? Maybe it was today. I'm losing track of days. Say, hey, you look at the tape. A.J. Brown's getting open. Now, was that a shot? No, it wasn't a shot. That was coach speak saying, hey, they have a lot
of mind games.
That
guy
gets open.
A little bit of mind games.
Or was it? Was it a little bit of a mind game?
I think it might have been. You know these coaches. Brian Daboll's a smart guy. He knows what he's doing when he says stuff like that. So, yeah. But again, like I just think that, you know, we talk about identity so much of football. Some of that's overblown. But I think in the Eagles' case, they've really like lost their way a little bit. Just what they are, who they are. And again, it comes back to committing to it and executing it. Those are the two things. They're not doing either one. They're not really doing a great job either way. So we'll see. If you can't get going against the Giants, boy, like not that the Giants are pitiful on defense or anything. They have a lot of talent in that defense, but at some point you need to get this thing going. You can't, you know, we can't be sitting here waiting forever. It can't be November and we're sitting here saying, all right, well, the Eagles will get it going. Like at some point you are who you are. It's about time for the Eagles to get back to their run game. And let's see what Saquon can do on Thursday night. He's banged up too, by the way. Like that's a story this week. Like he's got a little knee thing, and I assume he's going to play. But I mean, short rest, going on the road. Like this is not it hasn't been easy. It's not an easy run out. It usually isn't in the NFL. But a lot of the green lights that the Eagles caught last year, it's a little tougher this year. They're dealing with some adversity. Even in the wins, they were dealing with some adversity. And I think they're gonna handle it. Sirianni's been in this spot before. That's a lot of veteran leaders in that locker room. But this is it's been a tougher go for the Eagles than it was late last season when they were just steamrolling everybody.
I want to also give this public service announcement. And full disclosure, I do not get anything out of or from Amazon for this. I don't get free Prime or anything like that. But I just want to tell you that whatever the score is at halftime, don't turn the game off. Not because, you know, Witt and Tony Gonzalez and Ryan Fitzpatrick and Sherm and Carissa, not because they do an amazing job. You got to watch the halftime show. Mm-hmm. But because the last couple of weeks, the crazy swings in the second half for both of these teams, you need to watch the second half. The Eagles have had a 10-point swing or more in the second half each of the last 3 weeks. Remember back in week three, they were down 19 points at the half. They came back and they beat the Rams. Week four, they were outscored by the Buccaneers 19-7 in the second half, but they held on to win. And then last week, the Broncos outscored them 18-7 in the second half, and they ended up losing. So the Eagles are one of four teams to have every single game this year be a one-score game. So again, that's another example or another data point to your point, Frank, that they're not the same, because even when they are winning, it's an adventure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, that's what happens to Super Bowl champs. It gets harder. It's hard to repeat. That's what everybody says. This is the reason why.
Let's talk about the Colts here, because Frank is handing out grades. Now, these are quarter poll grades. We're heading into week six.
Andrew. The quarter poll is, that's a misnomer. The quarter poll in horse racing is when you have quarter of the race to go. I just have to point that out for my degenerates.
Okay, well, thank you. Okay, thank you. Yes. No, I do appreciate that, because I'm the person that points out every year that a team can't control their own destiny. Destiny, by definition, is predetermined.
One. That's a big one.
Right?
Yeah,
that's a big one. And many years ago, I was hosting the Jim Rome Show, like 20 years ago, and I was interviewing Willis McGahee after a Ravens final week victory got them into the playoffs. And Willis McGahee said to me, "We knew that we controlled our own destination." And everyone laughed. And I went, "Guys, stop laughing. He's
That's
right.
actually using it more correctly
He's
than
right.
destiny.
Yeah. They controlled where they would go the next week. They controlled their destination. They didn't control their destiny, because destiny is predetermined. Fate is predetermined. You can't change it. It's your fate. Anyway, I digress. What upsets me is that since we moved off of 16 games, the math had been so clean for so many years. Yeah. Now we do these like, oh, it's like the quarter way awards, but it's not really the quarter way, because you can't divide 17 by 4 cleanly. But Frank, forgetting the math there, if you want to hand out grades, you have given the Colts an A. No one's going to argue with that. Is that A sustainable?
I think these are going to be two different answers. That was the easiest grade I gave. I almost gave them an A+, because when you think of what the Colts have done, the only reason I didn't give them an A+ is because of the mental mistakes it cost them in a Rams game. The Colts should be 5-0, and I don't think anybody had them at even 4-1 right now. Like, I don't think anybody was like, yes, they're going to run away with the South. They're not running away with it. The Jaguars are there, but you know what I mean. I don't think anybody looked at it like the Colts are going to be one of the best teams in football through 5 weeks. And they certainly have been. There's no question about it. But I talked to, you know, with Fitz and Caroline on Yahoo Sports Daily about this on Tuesday. I wonder your opinion. I have this thing that I am just hating on the Colts. I know the Colts fans are probably going to be upset at me. They probably should be, because I have no reason to say that your team is fluky or this is unsustainable. They've played good football, like good, sound football. There's Jonathan Taylor's been awesome. Daniel Jones is by far the best season of his career so far. He's just playing great ball. Steichen went from being on the hot seat to being one of the NFL's hottest coaches. Everything's been good. But I don't sit there and say I think the Colts are going to win 12 games. I think they're falling back to earth at some point. Am I completely just being stubborn, head in the sand? I refuse to give Daniel Jones his flowers, because I just don't think the Colts are going to end up being a Super Bowl contender.
So I think there's a middle ground here. I think they're a playoff team. I think it'd be hard to screw it up at this point. I mean, they get the Cardinals this week.
Yeah,
they get the Cardinals this week at home. Kyler's banged up, didn't practice today. It's a foot injury. Who knows? Let's just assume he plays. They should win that game at home. They really should. They're not good enough to just say win. But, you know, then they get the Chargers on the road in L.A. We just discussed their issues. Then they get the Titans at home. Anyway, I think they're a playoff team. I don't know that they're a Super Bowl team. But once you get in, you're in. That's all you got to worry about. Just get in and anything can happen. But to your point, if you go back to the Daniel Jones and Anthony Richardson conversation, when they named Jones the starter, there were people in Indianapolis, or maybe people nationally, that said, you're not going to do anything with Daniel Jones. If you really need to develop Anthony Richardson, let's face it, this team's not going to be any good. Just develop Anthony Richardson and let him play. You heard those voices. Well, now look at this. Look what competent, beyond competent, Daniel Jones is playing very good football. Look what very good quarterback play can do.
Yeah, I mean, and Shane Steichen and whoever else was involved in that decision to go with Daniel Jones, absolutely the right decision. Yeah, how else can you say it? Like, it's just, I just had skepticism about Daniel Jones, but, you know, we've seen Mayfield, we've seen Darnold, we've seen Geno. Like, this is a thing now. Guys on their second, even third team sometimes. Just get with the right coaching staff, get the right support, be able to hand the ball to Jonathan Taylor 25 times a game helps too. Oh yeah. That's a pretty big deal for Daniel Jones. They've been fantastic and I've loved the story and I will give them all the credit to right now. Like there's nothing more they could have really done except maybe have 11 men on the field and not let the Rams get an 88 yard touchdown in that game. Maybe Adonai Mitchell could have held onto the ball across the goal line. That could have happened. But other than that, they've been amazing. And like you said, there's winnable games coming up. So I believe that they probably are a playoff team at some point, but I don't know. I have them like fifth in my power rankings right now. And I don't know that I believe they're a fifth best team in football. You have to put them there.
I agree, but that feels fine. Like it feels fine. It would have felt fine.
It's fine. But do I think they're going to be fifth when we're talking to mid-December? I really don't.
The only thing that matters is that come January, they're in the top 14. That's all that matters. Top 14, make it into the tournament. That's all they need. And maybe they could even win that division, but Jacksonville's looking good here as well. You say, Frank, you want to give them credit. I give you credit as we wrap up this show here, as we finish taping. You have done such an amazing job keeping an eye on that baseball game. You are hereby released. Please, good luck. You're only down one. That. Fingers crossed. we're all rooting for you. Go Brewers.
Not everybody. I know that Cubs fans out there. I
am rooting for the Brewers.
I know
in the name
are.
Of all things Robin Yount and all things that are holy. Right. Go Brew Crew. That's it for Yahoo Sports. No, I said Yahoo Sports Daily because you just said it earlier today. That's it for Inside Coverage. Frank's doing the two-a-days. That's it for Inside Coverage. For Frank Schwab, comma Brewer fan, my name is Andrew Siciliano. Thank you for listening and watching and liking and subscribing. We are back on Thursday for the full Week 6 preview show. Nos vemos. Until then. Wow, wow, wow.